Hello, everybody. This is Parrish Alford with the Daily Journal. I am the Ole Miss beat writer. I'm joined by Logan Lowry, our Mississippi State beat writer, and this is double coverage. We're going to come to you for, a good long while here and talk about Ole Miss and Mississippi State. Kind of a quiet time right now, but a little bit of news this week coming out of both programs as they transition from the football regular season, get ready for bowl practice and preparation, and kind of shift gears with basketball a little bit as well. And we'll also hear later in the program from Mark Cooper. He covers Oklahoma State for the Tulsa World, and Ole Miss will be facing the Cowboys in the Sugar Bowl New Year's night at 7:30. A lot of excitement in a lot of ways for the Sugar Bowl, Logan, but not real excited about that 7:30 kickoff. But I'm going to tell you, I can't complain. Man, I went back and I counted like seven daytime kicks for Ole Miss this season, so I can't complain about daytime football, man. I've had a lot of it, and I know that that you got very familiar with that after-eight kick, especially early in the season.
Yeah, it was a rough year as far as trying to meet deadline. I think I had four day games the entire year, and they came sort of sporadic, you know, during the time. And a lot of that time was during the day games is when I actually had a little bit of help with Kendrick coming down from our Ripley paper. And, yeah, I really didn't need his help during the day games. I needed his help for those night games. And it seemed like a lot of those night games I was on my own. So I was just scrambling around trying to write something halfway decent and get it in the paper on time. And a lot of times that was tough to do. Those first couple of weeks, Mississippi State kicked off down in Hattiesburg at 9 p.m. And then the next week, we're back here in Starkville, and it's an 8:15 kick against LSU. So definitely was a rough year as far as deadline goes. But I've got a 2:30 bowl kickoff, you know, over in Charlotte for the Belk Bowl, Mississippi State taking on NC State. So I'm really thankful for that kickoff time there. I think I could meet deadline that night.
Well, scramble is a good word, man, when you're trying to get everything in. And we do really appreciate the good work that our weekly newspapers do. I know Kedrick from Ripley was helping you out a lot. And, of course, I get a lot of help from John Davis at the Oxford Citizen. And you know, those guys doing good work with their publications and helping out with the Journal as well. And speaking of good work from the Journal, folks, be sure to look for The Memo where you search for your podcasts with Derek Russell and Brad Locke. All things Northeast Mississippi, all current events and news there in The Memo, another production of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal, just like double coverage. And we've got lots to talk about in the program today. And I want to start off, Logan, with All-SEC, man. Hayes in the barn now. The regular season is complete. And a lot of discussion about that All-SEC quarterback position, I thought, in the days leading up to the announcement of the team, I guess the last few weeks of the regular season, because both of the Mississippi quarterbacks in the SEC were having such good seasons. And really, as the end was getting closer and closer, it looked to me like there were only three real candidates to be first-team All-SEC quarterback. And those were Dak Prescott, Chad Kelly from State and Ole Miss, and then also Brandon Allen from Arkansas. And when we talk about All-SEC folks, remember this is the coaches' team. There's another All-SEC team coming out Monday. Logan, I think you're a voter there, and that'll be the AP team. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah, I've actually got to have that in by tomorrow on Thursday. So that'll come out on Monday for everybody. I think the SEC, I think, is the first conference team, and I think the AP is going to announce several other conferences in the coming days after that. But they're going to actually lead with the SEC, and I've got to get my ballot turned in here pretty soon. But, yeah, that quarterback battle, I think, was down to those three as far as the coaches poll. Those are the three real candidates that I have to look at and choose from. I'll go ahead and give you a peek inside mine. You know, I'm going with Dak Prescott. He was the first team guy last year. He had an even better year this year, so that's who I'm going with.
Well, I'll tell you what, if anybody has a real complaint of being left out of the whole thing because the coaches picked a first team and a second team. Prescott, first team. Chad Kelly, second team. You know, Brandon Allen, you know, when you want to talk about a senior and a nice career and a guy who this season, because, you know, this is where a lot of confusion comes in. Now, you know, they don't give you, of course, you're the voter. You vote for who you believe fits where and is the best choice for that team. But, you know, a lot of votes are cast on a career level with that rationale, what a player has meant for his team and how he's finished within his conference over the course of a career. A lot of people focus simply on a season achievement. And here's where a lot of people, Logan, I think, miss the boat is when votes are cast on pro potential.
Right.
These teams are not these are not about the player that you might become in the NFL. You know, these teams are about your production and your achievement at the college level. That being said, I thought it was interesting that Laramie Tunsil got no mention at all on either of the All-SEC coaches' teams. Now, could be a number of reasons for that. Number one, he did serve a 7-game NCAA suspension, so he only played 5 games. But those 5 games, you know, he was incredibly dominant and impactful for Ole Miss. In those 5 games, Ole Miss goes 4-1 and is one freak lateral play away from being 5-0 in the Tunsil games and playing for the SEC championship last week in Atlanta. I mean, that's, you know, I have pointed out that difference a lot. That he hasn't been the only difference in how Ole Miss has played down the stretch. I do think that the decision to turn Chad Kelly loose as a running quarterback really helped Ole Miss improve its run game. But no doubt Laramie Tunsil brought improvement to that run game as well. You go back and look, and in the games Tunsil played, the last 5, Ole Miss is averaging about 202 yards on the ground. They put up some good rushing numbers early in the season against New Mexico State, against Tennessee Martin, and against Fresno. But in the games Laramie Tunsil did not play against more meaningful competition, and we're talking here Florida, Vanderbilt, Alabama, and Memphis. In those games, Ole Miss averaged about 88 yards rushing. So the difference that Tunsil made in the run game was huge, and the idea that that he gets no mention at all on All-SEC was a little surprising. I'm curious to see how the media treats Laramie Tunsil, Logan, because often it's the media that will lean more to – they'll vote more on what a player might become in the NFL. And this is a guy who very likely will be the first SEC player chosen next spring.
Yeah, and I'm kind of that same way, you know, when I look at my voting – If you were to ask me, Parrish, who the best offensive lineman in the SEC is, I'm going to go with Laramie Tunsil. But I'm not going to vote for him for the All-SEC team. I just can't place a vote for a guy that missed over half the season. While he played well in the games that he played, he missed over half the season. It's kind of like, you know, Georgia's Nick Chubb. Played well in the games that he played in, but at the end of the day, he missed, you know, a lot of the season. And you know, I've got some other candidates that are right there, you know, obviously are ahead of him at the running back position this year. But it's Tunsil definitely has the talent. He's going to make a huge impact on the next level. But at the same time, he missed over half of this year. And, I have to dock him for that. You know, it's
well, and there are, when you look at statistical rankings and categories, often you'll see that, you know, there is a minimum level of pass attempts or a minimum level of rush attempts or whatnot to be included in statistical rankings. It's so hard to rank offensive linemen. That's where it's hard to vote for these guys when they're up for individual awards. If it's, say the Connerly Trophy and you're trying to compare an offensive lineman to a quarterback who has so many more measurable statistics and things you can look at to gauge performance. It's hard to compare those guys in scenarios like that. But when you talk about those statistical rankings and categories, many times there is a minimum number you know, to be even included. So obviously missing so many games, you know, is a factor in the voting for Laramie Tunsil. But I'll tell you what, you just you cannot deny the impact that he made for Ole Miss at the end of the season. And clearly Ole Miss playing its best football right now. And it's not surprising when you can, in the middle of the year, insert a player who could be among the top five chosen in the draft next year. When you, in the middle of the year, put that kind of talent into your program, you're going to see some benefit, and Ole Miss is seeing that right now.
Yeah, and you're right about offensive linemen. That's actually the toughest position to pick on these things. I've done this before, and you know, with the other guys, you can kind of compare statistics on the defensive side of the ball and, you know, the offensive skill positions. You kind of look at some statistics and compare how they did in big games and all this type of stuff. A lot of the offensive line, if you haven't seen the guys play, it's tough. You know, obviously there's a few teams that we don't see every year. So you kind of have to go back and do some research and, you know, sort of look at some other people's opinion too and kind of pick the best five offensive linemen that are out there. Another position that I was struggling with when I was asked to do this year was a running back, because I do believe Leonard Fournette is the best running back in the SEC. But Derrick Henry has the numbers and is likely going to win the Heisman Trophy. He had the better year. But talent-wise, I think Fournette is the better runner of the two. Luckily, once I got my ballot, there's actually two spots for running back this year, so I'm not going to have a tough decision ahead like I thought I was going to have at that position. So as far as Chad Kelly goes for Ole Miss, there's actually a separate ballot for us this year. There's an Offensive Player of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, Coach of the Year, and there's a Newcomer of the Year. And that's where I'm going to put Chad Kelly. I dare you to find somebody else in the SEC that had a bigger impact than what Chad Kelly had this year. I mean, he has really stepped in for that position that was kind of a question. I remember us talking back there in the spring, you know, Devontae Kincaid, Ryan Buchanan, Chad Kelly, all in a battle. And Hugh Freeze kind of kept that close to the vest, even though I knew what type of talent that Kelly had, you know, judging from his days down here at East Mississippi. And I saw the numbers that he put up down there last year, winning the national title with them. I thought that he would be the guy all along, and I thought that Freeze was maybe playing a little close to the vest, trying to keep Kincaid and Buchanan motivated and keep that battle going. But I knew that Kelly was probably going to emerge as a starter for Ole Miss, and he's played really well for him.
Yeah, I think Hugh was being pretty coy with that, and he wanted to keep the other guys interested, and he let them play in a couple of games. But, I mean, it was clear in the season opener who the best quarterback was in that competition. And, you know, and I'm sure it played out the way Hugh Freeze wanted it to. You know, he let everybody get a few game reps in, and he knew who his guy was going to be going to week three at Alabama. And Kelly passed for 305 yards in the second half and led a monumental upset there for the Rebels. Also making All-SEC on the coaches team for Ole Miss was Trey Elston, defensive back on the first team, Laquan Treadwell, first team at wide receiver, and on the second team, Robert Kimdichie and Marquise Haynes along the defensive line, and Mike Hilton in the secondary. So those were the Ole Miss All-SEC representatives on the coaches team, and joining Dak Prescott from Mississippi State was Fred Ross, wide receiver on the first team, and who am I missing? Second team, wide receiver, Darunya Wilson. Anybody else there, Logan, for them?
Mississippi State had three. They had Dak Prescott and Fred Ross on the first team and Bear Wilson on the second team.
All right. And you mentioned Devontae Kincaid, and what a great transition there. What a segue, because Devontae broke a little news earlier this week and announced his intentions to transfer. I wrote about a month ago, Logan, on the blog about the very interesting quarterback picture that Ole Miss could have in 2016 if no one left, because they could potentially have five scholarship quarterbacks in 2016. That assumes that Chad Kelly will return, as I think he will, and that Shea Patterson, the nation's number one rated quarterback, according to Rivals and probably other services too, assuming he follows through on his commitment and actually signs with Ole Miss and enrolls in January as is expected. That's where they stand right now. But if Kelly returns and Patterson signs and enrolls, then you have those two guys, plus Ryan Buchanan, who will be a junior and who will have a lot of experience in the program, and also Jason Pellerin, a freshman who is redshirting this season, a very athletic guy at 6'4", 229, a multi-sport standout in high school. I think a guy with a lot of potential, but all of a sudden you're bringing in, probably the nation's number one quarterback, and it'll be interesting to see what they do with Pellerin next season and in the years beyond. But had Kincaid not transferred, then all of a sudden you're talking about five scholarship quarterbacks, and that's a lot to carry even at that position. So Devontae Kincaid announcing his intention to move closer to home. He's from Dallas, Texas. He also had a brother to die, Logan, unexpectedly back in October. So there's a family situation there as well. But sounds like Devontae Kincaid wants to get closer to home. But I think even without the family situation, it would not have been surprising to see Devontae Kincaid transfer, because players want to play. And this is a guy with some ability coming out of high school, out of Skyline High in Dallas. He was a four-star prospect and rated the number 12 dual-threat quarterback in the country by Rivals. Guys like that want to get on the field.
Yeah, and you mentioned the five quarterbacks that could be at Ole Miss in that situation. That's actually where Mississippi State at right now. They have five scholarship quarterbacks on the team right now. And obviously Dak Prescott's going to walk out the door playing his last game after the Belk Bowl. But it's going to be a healthy competition this spring to be that starter at Mississippi State. Looking forward to kind of covering that and see who kind of emerges. Nick Fitzgerald, the redshirt freshman, has been Dak Prescott's backup all season. I think he's kind of got the leg up. He's actually been here the longest. He actually showed up for Liberty Bowl practice. He graduated high school, showed up and started practicing for the Liberty Bowl, even though he wasn't going to play, and then came out that following spring. And he graduated so early that he was able to get not only bowl practices in, but spring practice before Elijah Staley even arrived, who's actually another redshirt freshman. So he's got a couple of few more practices, and plus Elijah Staley had the knee injury and missed some time last year while he was playing basketball. Elijah Staley's going to play basketball again this year, so I don't know if how that's going to, factor in to that competition this spring. I think it definitely gives Fitzgerald a leg up if Staley's playing two sports and kind of juggling both of those and the schedules that they have. And then there's Damian Williams, who started the Egg Bowl 2 years ago. I guess 3 years ago now, he redshirted. He had a torn labrum. He hasn't played at all this season, so he was redshirting this year. And it's going to be interesting to see what he does at the end of this year, because he's kind of been the guy that's sort of left out in that fold. So, Damian Williams could be another potential transfer out situation like what you've got there at Ole Miss. And then there's Nick Tiano, who's was a true freshman this year out of Chattanooga, Tennessee, 6'4", 231, a big guy like that. Really haven't seen a whole lot of him. We only saw a couple of practices this past fall. So I'm looking forward to seeing more of him in the spring, kind of seeing what he brings to the table. I know he's got the size, but I want to see his athletic ability and how he throws the ball, and just haven't been able to see a whole lot of that. So Mississippi State doesn't look they're going to bring in a quarterback. Obviously if they've got four still left on the roster after Dak Prescott, or even three if Williams does decide to transfer, still going to be a really good competition. I don't think they're going to sign a quarterback this year, so we'll see where they're at, next fall.
And a little bit of football staff news, coaching staff news earlier this week for State, right?
Yeah, all the news about Dan Mullen leaving and going to all these different places, it's actually the strength coach that left Mississippi State, and it was actually one of the spots that many people thought that Dan Mullen may leave to. He's leaving and going to Maryland. Rick Court, he's been Mississippi State strength coach the last 2 years, filling in for Matt Bayless, who left after 5 years. Matt Bayless left and went to UConn. Rick Court left and joined DJ Durkin's staff there at Maryland. The two of those guys worked together in 2005, 2006 at Bowling Green, so there was a connection There are two Rick Courts, so Dan Mullen's going to have to make some staff changes, and that's really no surprise. Most coaches do towards the end of the year. Last year, of course, Mississippi State had to make a high-profile coaching change when Jeff Collins left and went to Florida. And, you know, you look at the job that he did with Florida's defense down there. Mississippi State brings back Manny Diaz. Defense played pretty well this year. So, you know, there was a big staff change, and that may not be the only one, but Dan Mullen's definitely going to have to be on the lookout for another strength coach.
Hey, folks, transitioning to basketball a little bit. We got a few minutes left. Ole Miss, a big road win last Saturday at UMass, and we'll call it a road win because while it was technically a neutral site game, UMass was playing only about 30 miles from its campus. That the game was actually played in Springfield, Massachusetts, which is a little bit closer to the University of Massachusetts than the University of Mississippi. Ole Miss going into Springfield and getting some really good defense. Andy Kennedy has kind of tweaked things after the George Mason loss, and he's got his two big stretch fours in the game at the same time. He started them both the last several games. Tomas Jello, the post-grad transfer from Liberty, and Anthony Perez. Now, he was really hoping that those guys would knock down some three-point shots, and they're not doing that right now. Jello's shooting about 27% from the arc, and Perez less than 20%. Now, those shots may yet come, but right now these guys are really contributing defensively because when they're in the game together, Perez goes to the three, and at 6'9", that gives him a big matchup advantage over most guards that he's going to defend, and that was the case against UMass that went into that game shooting about 41% from three, and Ole Miss held the Minutemen to 30.8% three-point shooting. So nice road win for the Rebels. They're going to add a couple of parts and pieces at the close of the semester. They expect to get Dante Fitzpatrick Dorsey, a freshman who was with the team back in the summer but had to go back to Elevate Sports Institute and work on some academics. And he's expected to join the team at the close of the semester, maybe be available for the Troy game. And this is a guy who was the number 174 player in the country, according to Rivals, last year. And he gives Ole Miss more height at the guard position at 6'5". So some athleticism and some depth there. And they also expect to add Terry Brutus. Logan, Ole Miss fans will remember that name. He's been around a long time, but he's only appeared in two games over the last 3 years because of just a big collection of injuries and surgeries. But when he was healthy as a freshman, he was a very athletic 6'6" player. Little bit of bulk, but a guy with some hops and really can get in there and help with rebounds. And, you know, and again, another guy who could come in and give the Rebels some depth. So a couple of parts and pieces coming at the close of the semester. Ole Miss is back on the floor this Saturday, another road game against Rick Ray and Southeast Missouri State. Ray, the former Mississippi State coach, those guys are struggling at the beginning right now. They're 0-8, and Logan, most of those losses are not close. Most of them are in the 12 to 15-point range or more. So you know, really a struggle at the beginning for Rick Ray at Southeast Missouri State, and Ole Miss will be there Saturday afternoon at 2.
Yeah, I saw when he took that job, it looked like it was going to be another rebuilding type of job for Rick Ray, and it just seems like that guy just can't get a break. He's a nice guy off the court, and you want to see nice guys, you know, get ahead and be successful. And so far in his career, Rick Ray just hasn't been able to do that as a head coach. And you hope that, you know, that they have some patience for him up there in Missouri, and maybe he can get things turned around up there where he couldn't here in Starkville. Mississippi State's also on the road in Missouri on Saturday. They play in Kansas City against University of Missouri, Kansas City, a school that I've never really even heard of. So I can't really tell you a whole lot about them. I do know Mississippi State themselves are 4-3 on the year. They've won their last three games, so they're playing a little bit better. It took them a while to kind of gel as a team. You know, Malik Newman missed a lot of the preseason. He was kind of thrown into the mix, you know, when they went down to Puerto Rico, and just really didn't find their rhythm. They, you know, lost a they had a really bad loss before they went to Puerto Rico against Southern University, and, you know, lost that game here at home, embarrassing loss, and they got blown out by Miami, who really looks like a probably an NCAA tournament team. And then they lost a heartbreaker to Texas Tech by 2 points, and you know, then they've won their last three games since then. So they've got a couple of road games coming up. Like I said, the Missouri-Kansas City game. Then they go to Tallahassee on Wednesday to play Florida State. So Mississippi State has got to win on the road, and that's something they haven't been able to do so far. These would be their first true road games this year. So Mississippi State's got to kind of find some things. They've played pretty well on offense this year. It's defense has kind of been their Achilles heel. They really just haven't been able to defend the basketball. Teams are shooting very high percentage against them. And they just, you know, if a few shots don't fall, then Mississippi State struggles. If they can't get a couple of balls to go in the basket, you know, the other teams are having no problem scoring on the other end. And it's not like teams are shooting a lot of threes against them and they're just going in. A lot of these are uncontested layups at the basket. There's just some breakdowns defensively. And that's something that Ben Hallin talked about that they were going to work on. Mississippi State's doing exams this week, and you know, they're going to try to practice as much as they could. And he said most of those practices would be just on their defense. They wouldn't even start looking at Missouri-Kansas City until late this week before the game. They were going to work on themselves and try to improve some of those breakdowns defensively.
Well, Logan, I know you said you don't know a whole lot about Missouri-Kansas City. I can tell you this fact about Missouri-Kansas City, and that is when they leave campus, they do not have to drive far at all for great barbecue. And that's especially Jack Stack there in downtown Kansas City. Good stuff, man. Hey, folks, that's it for this edition of Double Coverage. We thank you for being with us. This is Parrish Alford. I've been joined by Logan Lowry. Stay tuned after this. We're going to have a break. Then we're going to have Mark Cooper, who covers Oklahoma State for the Tulsa World. We'll be joined by Mark Cooper. Lots of good stuff coming in that interview. Be sure also to check out the memo where you search for podcasts. That's with Derek Russell and Brad Locke, and they will fill you in on all things happening in Northeast Mississippi, another production of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. I'm joined now by Mark Cooper, the Oklahoma State beat writer for the Tulsa World. Mark, how are you, man?
I'm doing quite all right. It's been a crazy few days. I wasn't expecting that I would be spending New Year's in New Orleans until Texas shocked Baylor and everybody this weekend.
Well, that was kind of shocking. Baylor has had just an incredible run of bad luck there at quarterback, man, with everybody getting hurt. But Oklahoma State, tell us a little bit about the Cowboys. They seem to be playing at such a high level and just reeling off a lot of wins until the last couple of weeks. And on the teleconference after the bowl was announced Sunday, I heard some questions about fatigue for the defense.
Yeah, you know, Oklahoma State got off to a 10-0 start this season. And really, I think it's kind of a year ahead of schedule. Most of their two deep are guys who are sophomores and juniors. And so coming into this season, it looked like an 8 or 9 win team, with 2016 looking like their big year and a chance to be a top 10 team and a playoff contender. But they got out ahead of schedule with some close wins. They beat Texas by a field goal and beat West Virginia in overtime, and Kansas State took them to the wire. And then they blew out TCU at the start of November, which really put them on the map. They ended the season with back-to-back losses at home to Baylor and Oklahoma. And yeah, the defense seemed a little bit fatigued in that Oklahoma game. The problem is they played TCU, Baylor, and Oklahoma in the last three of the last 4 weeks of the season. And TCU and Baylor each ran more than 100 plays against the Oklahoma State defense. And so a lot of the players dismissed fatigue as a factor, but Mike Gundy said that the defense just ran out of gas because they defended so many plays. You know, their middle linebacker, Chad Whitener, played 110 snaps in one of the games. And, you know, Emmanuel Ogba, their star defensive end, played 80 snaps against Baylor. And so they weren't very effective at the end of the season. And for the first half of the season, their defense was one of the better defenses in the Big 12. So this month is going to be huge for them to try to find what was working for the first 8 or 9 games of the season on defense and get it back before they faced an Ole Miss team that looks to me like it's kind of got things figured out on offense, especially these last 2 games of the season, right?
I tell you what, they really do look better on offense. But, you know, teams get better when you insert a top 5 draft pick at midseason, and that's what Ole Miss was able to do after the Laramie Tunsil suspension was complete. But, you know, I wrote some things on the blog. It's not only been about Tunsil. Obviously, he's a huge part of what they've been able to accomplish. But Chad Kelly's running the ball now, and that was just kind of something that Hugh Freeze waited until the end of the season to really start calling. And a lot more designed runs for Chad Kelly. So something that opponents were not really preparing for until recently, and Kelly has been very effective picking his spots and reading defenses and being a big part of the run game. So they have been much better on offense. And Tunsil, you know, we think of him a lot as a pass protector, but the biggest impact he's made has been in the run game. Ole Miss was just not running the ball very well at all against quality defenses. So they had averaged, they'd put up some big numbers against New Mexico State, Fresno State, and Tennessee Martin, but against Memphis, Florida, Vanderbilt, and Alabama, in that 4-game stretch, they averaged like 85 yards on the ground. And since Tunsil has come back, they've averaged more than 200 yards. Defensively, Oklahoma State, is it only fatigue at the end? Are there some injuries? Are there other things going on?
They've gone through more injuries on the defensive side of the ball than they have on offense. At 2 different games during the season, they lost 2 of their veteran defensive players, Ryan Simmons, who is their middle linebacker, and this was his 3rd year as a starter, and Jimmy Bean, who occupied the defensive end spot opposite Emmanuel Ogba and had 5.5 sacks in 8 games and was really having a great senior season. And the 2 of them combined had more than 65 starts for Oklahoma State. So those guys are tough to replace. And at middle linebacker, they've been fine with Chad Whitener, who's a player who transferred in from Cal. He sat out last year and has kind of stepped into that spot. Defensive end, they've rotated guys in opposite Ogba, but I think at a certain point you can tell that they're missing those veterans on the field. They've also played better offenses in the last month of the season, and so I think they've been exposed a little bit. Baylor ran the ball for 304 yards against Oklahoma State in their win in Stillwater, and Oklahoma with Samaje Perine and Joe Mixon ran the ball at will. It'll be an interesting matchup because, you know, like you said, Chad Kelly has run the ball well these last 3 games of the season. And if there's one thing that I would say Oklahoma State's defense struggled with from the start of the year to the end of the year, it's with a running quarterback. Even when they went up to Iowa State and they won a close game up there, Iowa State's quarterback ran for a career high 130 yards. And, you know, going back to the season opener at Central Michigan, they allowed Central Michigan's quarterback to rush for a career or season high in yardage. So that'll be an interesting matchup to look at. And this is one thing that they haven't really defended very well. You know, strangely enough, the one time that they defended it well was when they beat TCU and Trevon Boykin. And I guess maybe they prepared for that a little bit more that week. So maybe a month to prepare, they get ready for it. But I'm looking forward to this matchup between Tunsil and Emmanuel Ogba, because both of those guys are on most first-round draft boards that you see online. And it sounds like Ole Miss is only allowed 4 sacks in the 5 games since Tunsil's come back to that offensive line, right?
Yeah, he's just been really good there. And he had a huge challenge his first game back. I mean, he'd been out for 7 games. He comes back and he plays Texas A&M and their defensive end, Miles Garrett, there. And he was able to neutralize Garrett really, you know, while catching himself up to game speed and just kind of getting back into the swing of things there. You know, Ole Miss is, like I said, he's made a big difference in the running game, but their backs have run hard. They had several runs against Mississippi State where they just ran over the defender and just big collisions in the middle of the field and just ran over a guy and kept going. And it's just a lot of confidence in an area in which they really had struggled earlier this year. I was going to ask you about that TCU game. I know Boykin's been hurt. Did he play the whole game there against Oklahoma State?
Yeah, he was injured the week after that against Kansas, and that was kind of the masterpiece for Oklahoma State defensive coordinator Glenn Spencer. They intercepted Boykin four times, and they had studied TCU's offense so well on film that they threw out some schemes and you know, drifting a defensive end back into to coverage a little bit that I guess Boykin hadn't really seen all season. And a couple of the interceptions, it just looked like Oklahoma State had him read, knew where the ball was going before Boykin even let go of it. It was a pretty incredible defensive performance in a game that going into it, you thought it was going to be a close and high scoring game. And it was, you know, 28-9 at halftime. But it's something that they haven't been able to repeat. And I'm not sure if they have it in them or, you know, they're not going to get Simmons and Bean back, those two veterans. They're both going to be out for the bowl game. Everybody else is healthy, and they have a lot of depth in the secondary. The key will be if Ogba can disrupt in the backfield and get to Chad Kelly. He's had at least a half sack in all but one game this season, and last year he had a little bit of a breakout year. He sacked Jameis Winston twice when they played Florida State, but he wasn't consistent the whole way. And this year he's put it together, and he's been a force for Oklahoma State.
Offensively, how have the Cowboys attacked people? How have they been successful?
Well, you know, last season when they went 7-6, the reason that they struggled and they lost five games in a row was their offensive line was dreadful. They couldn't protect the quarterback and they couldn't run the ball. And you know, once teams stopped the run, then they couldn't protect the quarterback even more. And so that was the priority coming into the season was figuring out this offensive line and figuring out how to establish a run game. They brought in one of the UAB transfers to be their left tackle, Victor Salako. Their offensive line has protected Mason Rudolph better, but they still haven't run the ball. You know, they're averaging less than 4 yards per carry for the season. And 2 weeks ago against Baylor, they had 8 rushing yards as a team, which was their lowest output in a couple of decades. Their leading rusher, Chris Carson, you know, he came in from junior college. He flipped from Georgia right before signing day. And so everybody thought he was going to come in and be the guy and be their first 1,000-yard back in a couple of seasons. He's their leading rusher, but he only has 504 yards. And he's been largely a disappointment. So they've had to resort to throwing the ball most of the time. And fortunately, they've had the quarterback to do that. Mason Rudolph is the quarterback who came in as a true freshman last season for the last 3 games, starting to Oklahoma in Bedlam last year and then beat Washington in the bowl game and set things up for this season. He missed the Oklahoma game with a foot injury. And we've since reported that, you know, he had a surgery to repair a small broken bone in his foot. But Mike Gundy said yesterday that he anticipates Mason Rudolph to be fine and ready to play come January 1st, which is important because he throws one of the best deep balls in the Big 12 and maybe in the country. You know, the other key when they beat TCU and beat some of these other teams is he was just able to throw the ball over the top of the defense to James Washington, who's their star wide receiver right now. And then they counter that with J.W. Walsh. They play a 2-quarterback system, and J.W. Walsh is more of a running quarterback, played mostly in goal line situations. Though against Oklahoma and against a couple other teams, they weren't afraid to send him out there at midfield for a drive. Mason Rudolph was struggling a little bit. It's not a quarterback controversy. I mean, we've racked our brains to try to find an example to compare it to. And the only thing that comes to mind is what Florida did with Chris Leak and Tim Tebow. Because it's a little bit similar to that with what J.W. Walsh does when he comes on the field, but Walsh is a fifth-year senior who's been a starting quarterback before, so it's different because he has so much experience. But they need Rudolph for this offense to go. I think both of those quarterbacks were important than them winning 10 games. They wouldn't have started 10-0 if they didn't have one of them. But Rudolph is the key to making this team go. And you know, they're hoping in this month off that they can establish some things with the running game. But they've been hoping all season. And I'm not sure that it's going to get any better with a month time here.
Well, Rudolph may find some opportunities against the Ole Miss secondary. They've struggled to cover receivers. And you go back and look in their losses. And in their losses, the opposing quarterback is completing passes at like 75%. I mean, it's you know, they've really struggled there in the secondary, but they were able to have some success against Mississippi State because they got in the backfield and really disrupted Dak Prescott and sacked him seven times and pressured him a lot more than that. So it was a big pass rushing game, a lot of success there for Ole Miss. Tell me a little bit about the Big 12, Mark. I mean, you know, I'm outside the footprint, and the national image, I guess, is lots of offense and high-scoring games and not a lot of defense. Is that a fair assessment of the league overall?
To an extent. I mean, there aren't many defenses that you would consider to be very strong. I mean, Texas Tech is kind of the prime example for that, because Oklahoma State went down there and it was a 70-53 game, and there wasn't a whole lot of defense in the first half of that game. But then Oklahoma State came out in the second half and I believe held Texas Tech to 14 points, and they probably had 10 drives in the second half. So they played good defense there. I mean, Oklahoma wins the conference, and if you ask me why, I would give you two reasons. One, of the top four teams in the conference, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, TCU, and Baylor, Oklahoma is the only one whose quarterback stayed healthy for 12 games. And the second reason is Oklahoma has the best defense in the conference. Their defense, you can stack up there with anybody in the country, and I think you'd be impressed with it, especially with the way they shut down Baylor and Oklahoma State to end their season. Oklahoma State's defense is interesting because from a points per possession standpoint, through the first first 9 or 10 games of the season, it was pretty impressive. They were doing a whole lot. They were up near the top of the nation's leaderboard in tackles for loss and sacks. But these last three games really changed the perception of that. And now, they're down in the 80s and 90s in a lot of the defensive ranks, just because these last two games were so horrific for them. Like I said, Baylor ran the ball for more than 300 yards, and then Oklahoma scored at will against them in the last game of the season. As a whole in the conference, I think the conference is getting some excellent quarterback play, which is part of the reason why the defense has struggled. You know, Baker Mayfield and Trevon Boykin have both been Heisman candidates at different times in this season. I think Mason Rudolph would kind of get more attention if it weren't for J.W. Walsh stealing his touchdowns, because, you know, J.W. Walsh threw for 13 touchdowns. Most of those came when he came in with his package inside the 10-yard line. And for most teams, those are touchdowns that would have gone to the starting quarterback. And over at Baylor, Seth Russell might have been a Heisman candidate if he didn't get hurt. And Texas Tech has a guy in Pat Mahomes who is kind of a star that a lot of people don't talk about because his team only won 7 games. So I think you've got a balance between some defenses that aren't too great, and you've got some excellent quarterback play, maybe the best since 2011-12, when you had Brandon Weeden and Robert Griffin III and some of those guys in this conference. It's different, and it'll be interesting to see how it stacks up come the bowl game. I think last year's bowl games, especially the Baylor-Michigan State game and the TCU-Ole Miss game, were interesting. What does Ole Miss think of the Big 12 after the way the Peach Bowl went last season?
Well, a lot of respect, as you might expect. a lot of respect, and that's an interesting situation right now, because Hugh Freeze started talking about this bowl game in his post game press conference after Mississippi State. He was lobbying for a New Year's Six game a little bit. But he took that further to say, I want another shot in a game like that. You know, I expect Ole Miss to be more prepared and to play better in this Sugar Bowl for a couple of reasons. One, they're a better team. They're better at quarterback, and they're also healthy right now. They weren't healthy at the end of last year. They were kind of on fumes. But they're going to be motivated. They're going to be motivated by the result from last year. So they're going to play better. You know, whether that translates to a win remains to be seen. But anyway, it should be a good game. Mark, we appreciate you coming on, man. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.